Hello and welcome back to What Page Are You On? I'm Bethany Rutter and I'm here with my co-host,
Alice Slater,
to bring you another instalment of Quality Book Chat. Since episode 2, things have been going really well. We were featured as the number one new and noteworthy podcast on the Apple Podcast homepage, and we even made it into the Apple Podcast Top 200 chart.
Whee.
So we just wanted to say hi to any new listeners. Now, on with the show. Today, we are talking about film adaptations of books, the good, the bad, and the ones we'd really like to see get made. So let's start with the good. Alice, what are your faves?
My all-time favourite adaptation is The Virgin Suicides.
Of course. I knew you loved that. And yet when you said to me, you know what I like, you're like, you know what I'm going to want to talk about in this episode, I was like, actually, I don't. But of course, I should have seen that coming.
I just think it's the perfect adaptation. The movie is absolutely beautiful. It is perfectly casted. I don't think they skip anything or cut anything out. They don't amalgamate any characters. It's a pretty true adaptation. And it's just so beautiful. It captures that time period. It's 70s suburban America. The color palette is just stunning. It's like all kind of rose gold, oh, on trend, ahead of its time.
Yes. It's very like Instagram filtery, like soft focus looking. Yeah.
Very kind of dreamy.
Yeah.
But then it also does kind of cut to that kind of twilight vibe of a more kind of blue cast.
Grayish, washed out. Yeah. Like there's the scene and the on the football pitch, which feels really like grey, dark. I think all the girls are cast really well, but I always think of how well cast their parents are, doing such a good job of like very unpleasant characters.
Mm-hmm.
I think, yeah, they are very, very well done.
And the guy that plays Trip Fontaine.
Josh Hartnett.
And
the one dude that I do not fancy in any way, that I know was like a major like heartthrob for so many people of my age group.
So the thing with him, I think, in that film specifically, is that when I watched it as a teenager, I was like, oh my God. And watching it as an adult, I'm like, ugh. In that way that it's just perfect. Like, he's a stoner and he's like always high and tripping over, and he's such an asshole. Like, him leaving her in the football pitch is just one of the most upsetting things. Well, it's not the most upsetting thing.
Yeah, in that film. Yeah, of all the things. No, it's a really great one. And I'm very glad that she directed it. I feel like it suits her aesthetic perfectly. It's directed by Sofia Coppola, if you did not know.
I didn't want to say that because I always want to call her Coppola.
I don't know.
Coppola.
Yeah. So I feel like that translates perfectly to a visual. It's such a visual movie when the book is like quite straight narrative. And I feel like it was a really well done kind of translation into visual shit.
I don't think it's a straight narrative, though.
You think it's got a lot of, like, atmosphere? Yeah,
well,
it does.
Well, it's a very complicated narrative because it's first-person plural, apparently the first ever full-length novel to be written in the we narration. And also it has this very odd framing device of these grown men looking at their, you know, quote-unquote evidence of this family. And I don't know of any other book that's written with that framework.
Yeah, it's true.
And I'm glad that the movie doesn't actually have them as adult men in it.
Yeah, that would
doesn't
be
have
wrong.
This like weird thing of them like touching hairbrushes and things. That would have creeped me out too much, I think.
Agree. Oh, sorry, we should have said The Virgin Suicides is written by Jeffrey Eugenides. You know, just, you know, to give him
yeah,
props,
give
the props,
props
he needs, given that he did write it.
Yeah, God love him.
No, I love that film. So I was thinking about, I think The Virgin Suicides looks really amazing and is really visual. And one of my all-time favourite film adaptations only came out in the last couple of years, which is Under the Skin. Have you seen it?
I've seen the movie. I haven't read the book, which is Michelle Faber.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They are so different. Just the book is like a really kind of straightforward but weird narrative. Like it does have a kind of straight up plot, and there is a lot of backstory as to like who she is and why she is driving around Scotland and why she's kind of trapping and seducing these men. You learn so much in the book Under the Skin, whereas in the film it's just Scarlett Johansson with a weird haircut driving around.
Doing her British accent.
Doing her weird Hello. British accent on the streets of Glasgow, trying to get men to come into her van. And then when they get into her van, weird shit goes down in the most, like, spectacularly visual way, which I just love. And I think it is so amazing when you can take a book and make it an amazing film, but such a different film. Because I think trying to do that weird, the weird narrative of the book, which makes things quite explicit, would be an interesting film, but it probably wouldn't be such a memorable film. But the visual language of the film and the absolutely incredible soundtrack, which is done by Mika Levy, which is so amazing, I think makes it such a specific experience to film, which is, like, obviously visual and things that you hear that is so different to the book. And I really like that, that it's such a different experience.
I was actually thinking about, because I know how much you love Under the Skin, and I was thinking about that movie on my way here. And I was thinking, I just can't actually imagine what the narrative is like.
Yeah.
Because when I think of that film, I think of the incredible, the starkness and the stillness of, obviously, like, the scenes, which will remain unnamed. But then also the soundtrack, which is kind of so overwhelming. And
it stays with you.
Lots of people, like, I know that you had it, you listened to it all the time. I remember people tweeting saying they're listening to it, and I don't know how you could. For me, it was so, like,
claustrophobic and creepy and oppressive.
Yeah. But then all of that is contrasted with so much of that movie is just like a camera on a dashboard.
Yeah.
And Scarlett Johansson, you know, pulling up in front of someone saying, hello, can I
offer you a lift?
Neither of those things kind of translate to the written word to me.
Yeah.
So that's why I think it's an intriguing adaptation, because I just can't.
I can't imagine how Jonathan Glazer got there from reading that book, but I'm so glad he did. I think it's a real testament to the creativity of a filmmaker that you could kind of envisage that end point from reading the book. I think it's such a good book as well. It's a weird story, but it is a story. It's not a kind of strange experimental novel. It is a straight up novel that has a weird plot.
I think that's also why I haven't read it yet, is because I assumed it would be more experimental not than at all. Perhaps it is.
It's really very straightforward. As I feel like a lot of Michelle Faber's fiction is, it's conventionally, like, structurally conventional, but, like, kind of weird and interesting.
Mm-hmm.
I would really recommend the book. I really like the book. I would recommend you it. I think it actually doesn't matter if you read the book or see the film first. I think they stand really separately and they're both great. Any other faves, Alice? Tell me more.
Okay, other favorites of mine. Okay, so obviously we talked about Carrie previously being Fat Carrie. So I love the original
Brian De Palma
adaptation. Yeah, the Brian De Palma adaptation of Carrie. I've watched all the others, they're fine. Like, I'll watch them again if I must, but the original one I think is amazing.
That is a banging film.
And it's also the only Stephen King novel that I have enjoyed. I liked his memoir on writing. I think we've also talked about that before, but it's the only book that
you stand by with. And you yeah. are like, yes.
But the reason why I brought up Carrie, because that's old news, we've talked about that before, was that I remembered another, when I was thinking about adaptations, I remember another character that's fat in the novel.
Cool.
Adaptation. Most people don't know it was a book. It's one of the most famous movies of all time. It is Psycho.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, man. Norman Bates is a fat character.
Because he's weird.
Uh-huh.
That's
why. He's weird and he's lonely and he lives in his, like, creepy house.
With his mom. that's pretty interesting.
And so it's a novel by a guy called Robert Bloch. And famously, Hitchcock, the first thing he did was bought up every copy of this book he could. They bought thousands of copies of it to try and keep the ending a secret.
Oh my God, that's so cool.
Isn't that awesome?
That's really cool. Like, obviously, Alfred Hitchcock did many bad things.
Oh,
but that's quite cool.
A wild, yeah.
He was a piece of shit. but he's your neighbour, Leighton Stone.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, he's family, basically. Yeah.
Weird family, but family nonetheless.
So yeah, I think that's a great little, it's a novella.
Oh, cool.
It's very loyal, as far as I recall anyway. I read it a long time ago.
Potentially because Alfred Hitchcock bought all the copies, I did not know it was a book.
Yeah, no one knows.
Now like all of our listeners know.
And it's still in print, it is available.
Cool.
Go read it.
Yeah.
Treat yourself.
So speaking of dark, creepy things, we cannot go an episode without talking about our mutual favourite thing, which we talk about every episode, which is my all-time favourite adaptation, which is one of my all-time favourite films, Silence of the Lambs.
You know, I can't believe I have a little list of the books that I reckon we would be talking about, and I cannot believe that wasn't even written down, because it was like, we'll remember, we'll know, we'll
it's
just...
It's so good. Don't you just love it?
I do love it. Have you read... Okay, so we've talked about the Silence of the Lambs. Let's talk about the others.
No. I mean, yes, we can, but... I've only seen what's the kind of 80s one?
Manhunter.
I've seen that.
So that is based on the first book, Red Dragon.
Yeah, which I haven't seen the film Red Dragon, but I have seen the series Hannibal, which I love.
I have not seen.
It's very sexy.
Oh yeah.
And it's got some sexy babes in it.
I feel like it's very loosely. It's like it
messes
doesn't feel
around.
Canon to me.
Yeah, it really messes around for the first couple of seasons. And then in the third season, it does the Red Dragon storyline. Mm-hmm. For reasons that I don't fully understand, because they never played by the rules until now. Tell me about them. So, what's good, what's bad?
Okay, let's get into it. So Red Dragon is the first novel. Manhunter was the first adaptation, which... had, oh my god, what is his name?
The guy Brian that plays Cox.
Brian Cox as
not
Hannibal Lecter.
Not the space dude, the not actor. The other Brian Cox.
Imagine if it was, though.
Space
like,
dude Brian
two
Cox.
Two careers.
What a life. What a man.
So that was the first adaptation. Brian Cox is absolutely amazing. He plays such a different version of Hannibal compared to old Anthony Hopkins. The book itself is also great. It has... much like Silence of the Lambs, like, Hannibal Lecter is never really the star of the show.
Yeah.
You know, until later on. And, yeah, it's just a fun time. It's a fun read. I also feel like you can read them in any order.
Yeah,
it doesn't really matter.
When I said I was going to read Silence of the Lambs on Twitter.com, some people said you should read them in order, and some people were like, you don't have to read it in order. And obviously, I went with what I wanted to hear, which was you don't have to read them in order, because I just really wanted to read Silence of the Lambs.
But that's, I mean, so I read Silence of the Lambs first, because for exactly the same reason.
You were thirsty for it.
I was just a thirsty girl, and I wanted to read that one. And I went back and read Red Dragon, and again, it feels like a prequel. It fills in some of the gaps, it answers some questions, but because it doesn't start with Hannibal Lecter, it starts with a whole other case, a whole other detective. Like, it's a whole different ballgame. So, yeah, I think you can read them in any order. Well, those two. Hannibal is a weird beast. The adaptation is, it's fine. Like, I feel like I've watched it. I can't really remember it. I remember the pigs.
Is
I remember
Julianne
the prosthetics.
Moore? No.
I can't even remember.
I know she's in one of them, but I don't know. Whatever.
I think it must be that one.
So if we're talking about the pigs, is that the one with the dude with the face?
Yeah. And who is the face? It's someone really famous and I never realized. I'm going to pull up IMDb. Excuse
me. So in Hannibal... it is Most Beautiful Man in the World, Michael Pitt.
Oh my god, Michael Pitt is the most beautiful man in the world.
Yeah, and imagine casting him in that role and then having that happen. What a cruel trick of fate.
That reminds me of another adaptation that we will discuss, which I didn't even think of until you mentioned Michael Pitt.
Is it the boning one about the siblings?
Yeah. Yeah! The Dreamers.
Cool.
Yeah, girl. All right. So anyway, while I look this up, so Hannibal. So the thing with Hannibal and... I don't know if I should... It doesn't include... No, I'm not going to say it because it's a spoiler alert. But there is a weird twist in Hannibal that I can't remember. If it's not as explicit in the movie. In the movie, I hated it. I was like, what the fuck? That's ridiculous. That would never happen. I don't believe it. I don't like it. I'm not into it. In the book, I was like, you know what?
Cool. This is weird.
I'm kind of into this. I believe it.
It was Gary Oldman who played Mason Verger in the film.
How did you do that so quickly?
Because I wasn't thinking about talking while... whereas you were saying interesting and important things.
I'm always thinking about talking.
Yeah.
So in the book, I was this element, I was sold. You know, I completely was 100% into it. Love it. It is like intrinsic to me to the whole kind of span of that world. In the movie, I just didn't believe it. Didn't
it
work
silly,
for me.
Yeah.
And Hannibal Rising just doesn't exist.
It did to you.
It didn't actually happen.
Okay, cool.
Yeah, just don't bother.
So, obviously, of these, I've only seen Manhunter, and I've only seen it once, and Silence of the Lambs, which I've seen many times. And I know that we've talked about Silence of the Lambs on a couple of occasions, but the reason that I really advocate for it as an adaptation is that, again, it does something at various points that you can't do in a book, which is show two things happening at the same time.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And they are some of the best scenes in any thriller I've ever seen that are in Silence of the Lambs, where you think you're watching one thing, but you actually find out you're watching something different about 30 seconds later. And you can't do that in a book. You can't be in two places at once.
Scenes. Yeah, yeah. Yeah.
So it contains some of my favourite thriller scenes of all time. And for that reason, it is a marvellous adaptation of a great book. I don't think it's necessarily better than the book, but I think for a film, it does exactly what a film should do and exploit its medium.
Yeah, agreed.
Any more?
Oh, well, The Dreamers. Let's talk about The Dreamers.
Let's talk about The Dreamers.
This is great. So The Dreamers is about an American guy who moves to Paris in the 60s, and he meets these like incredibly glamorous, cool siblings, and he ends up moving into their like wild
luxurious
flat. Yeah, like luxurious, crumbling French apartment. And they just obsessively watch and talk about movies. And the book, obviously, kind of, the book is, I feel, more about the relationship, the kind of love triangle between the three. Whereas the film splices in scenes from these movies. And it's just amazing. It's such a great kind of homage to cinema. It's such a great celebration of film at a time when it was like water running out of your hands, like you could catch it at the cinema or you missed it.
So
like,
sorry, I didn't know this was a book. Who wrote the book? What is it?
I want to say Gilbert Adair. I don't need to look that up. It was Gilbert Adair.
Okay.
And famously, he really held out. Like, people were snapping at his heels for the film rights for years. And he held out because he not only wanted the right director, but the right casting. And most of the people that approached him weren't prepared to give him much control, yeah, as is the way.
Was it Bernardo Bertolucci?
Yes, it was. Yeah. Bernardo Bertolucci. Finally, he approached, and I think he already had
producers and people tied up. Like
he had
actors.
Stuff in mind, yeah. And finally, the writer said, okay, let's do it. And I think the combo, so it's Michael Pitt, Eva Green, who I could just stare at forever. And
Louis Garrel, yeah, one of the sexiest men in the world. I fancy him so much. And you know what him and Michael Pitt have in common is they have really big lips, which I just love.
Yeah. There's this scene in the movie where Eva Green, he's like cleaning his teeth. Michael Pitt is like cleaning his teeth. And then she does something ridiculous and he has to pause and he's just there with all this foam dripping out of his mouth. And I'm like, I still would. I would still kiss you right on the mouth.
Yeah, even it's like just that. So big. Cool. No, this is very informative to me because I didn't even know that was a book. My kind of final book that I definitely had in mind as wanting to talk about in this episode. Obviously, you know, we just freestyle sometimes, but there was one more that I really wanted to talk about that will lead me on to a current release. So one of my favourite adaptations ever is the film Let the Right One In. I have read the book, I have seen the film, and I have seen the stage show.
Oh my God, the stage show.
I think the film is the best of the three. Mm-hmm. I think...
And this is the original Swedish movie, not the American
adaptation. Yeah, which I,
adaptation.
Like Hannibal Rising, just didn't happen.
I never even saw it.
It's just not... It was not needed in the world. I can happily go about my days pretending it never happened. I don't think it was necessarily bad. I just really didn't need it.
Mm-hmm.
So this is Let the Right One In by Thomas Alfredson, the Swedish one. As I said, I have read the book and stage show and film. And I think one of the reasons that I love the film is that having read the book, it made me really admire the adaptation process to streamlining a book to its like best cinematic elements. If you read the book, which you have not.
I have.
You have? Okay, yeah. Cool. I don't know. There's that whole weird zombie storyline.
That's the thing. The book, this is something that I was thinking about on my way here. The book is so graphic.
Yeah.
And although it's still very well written, the language is always, you know, very vivid. It is just so extra.
And very violent and gory, yeah. And has some kind of weird sex. I just remember like a description of this zombie dick, I think I remember this.
Horrific.
Which I think would have not made it a better film. If they'd kept that stuff in.
Agreed.
I think it would have been a much worse film, and it wouldn't have had the really like clean, coherent visual identity that the film has. I think that was the film that made me really get how, what a big difference a good adaptation that knows what to keep and what to leave makes such a difference.
And that film is beautiful.
Yeah,
as
I think
well.
The film is so beautiful.
Even the violence is just so stylish.
Yeah, and it's really sad and very like atmospheric, and it's about. I think he's about 12 or 13-year-old boy who lives on an estate with his mum, and someone moves in next door, and it's about like his growing friendship relationship with the person that moves in next door, who is like a 1,000-year-old vampire who looks like a teenage girl. And it's just, yeah, about like loneliness and sadness and isolation and being bullied. And I feel like it actually ties in very well with one of the books that we're going to talk about in our Halloween episode. So I will say no more.
Tease.
But I just think it's a really amazing film that was similarly very well cast. You know, we've talked about people that really capture like what we've had in our minds about characters. I think Let the Right One In did that really well. It's just really like mystical and weird and sad. And it has the best trailer. It has my favorite trailer of all time. And that was what first alerted me to the existence of anything called Let the Right One In. And I love
it. I have a question for you. You keep saying it's sad. So I remember when the movie came out, me and a friend went to see it, and we had a debate afterwards about whether or not the ending,
the very ending,
the very ending, the last scene, is that an optimistic or a pessimistic ending?
I think it is, in the context of the film, an optimistic ending. But I just think anything that leads you to having to live like that is quite sad. I think anything that further reinforces, like, social isolation or whatever is, like, a sad theme. But unfortunately, talking about this film means we now have to talk about my thing of the moment, which is... I was so hyped. I was so naively hyped about the film. I know, yeah.
I know what you're going to talk about.
I was so looking forward to the film of The Snowman by Jur Nesbø coming out.
I only realized recently, like, oh shit, hold on. His name is going to be Jo, not Joe.
Yeah.
Every bookseller in that fucking country calls him Jo Nesbø.
I'm sure he doesn't mind. I'm sure he's just happy you're selling the books. I was so looking forward to the release of Thomas Alfredson's The Snowman.
Wait, is it the same director?
It's the same director.
I did not realise that.
So he seems to be doing a roaring trade in adaptations because he also did Tinker Tailor Soldier Spy, which I haven't seen, but I'd probably like to. So The Snowman comes out today, which is the day that we are recording it, which will be 3 days ago by the time this episode is released. So it will still be a new release by the time this comes out. I was so looking forward to it because... ahead of the release of the film, I realized I hadn't read the book, so I downloaded the audiobook and listened to it on my recent holiday, and I had the best time. I really just loved listening to this story that I think the audiobook is like very long, like maybe 18 hours, and I feel like that's quite a long book.
I'm surprised because the book itself doesn't look
that long,
that chunky.
Yeah,
I know that like the book lengths can be really deceiving because of font size and whatnot, but
yeah, so I was surprised too because I didn't think it was like a notoriously long book, but whatever. So maybe I would not have bothered to read it if I thought it was long. I just had the best time. I thought it was such a fun book. I think it's really well structured. I think it has some weird stuff in it that you're like, that's weird, is that a clue? And some of it is and some of it isn't, but you never feel shortchanged. I just think it's such a good thriller and I loved it so much. So I was like, there is no way this film can be bad. And then part of me was like, wait, it's really dense and has a lot of like strands and a lot of points at which you think it's kind of over and it's not. I don't know if they can condense this down into like a 2-hour film, and it turns out they probably can't, because all the reviews mention how muddled it is, how confused, how it doesn't make sense, and I'm like, yes.
I was going to ask, because you were thinking about trying to catch it this morning, but obviously you didn't because you've been at work.
Yes.
So you haven't seen it yet?
I've not seen it.
Will you see it?
I might try and see it on Tuesday when it's $3.99 cinema day in Walthamstow.
God bless it.
Yes. But yeah, I'm sad. I'm disappointed. I feel like I've been let down.
I'm really sorry for you.
Yeah. I just want to see a really good thriller. I thought it could be my new Silence of the Lambs, but...
There will be no new Silence of the Lambs. No. You know, speaking of thriller adaptations that were slightly disappointing...
Where to begin?
Yeah, where to begin? But first of all, I want to talk about an author that I know that we both like. So Gillian Flynn.
Yes.
So far, they've adapted 2 out of 3 full-length novels. What did you think of, or have you even seen, the Gone Girl adaptation, first of all?
I have seen the Gone Girl adaptation. I haven't seen... Is it Dark Places? Yeah, I haven't seen that. I've seen Gone Girl. I liked it. I pathetically like David Fincher. Like, I really like David Fincher films. And it just feels like he just did a good job. Like,
I thought it was really solid.
Yeah, yeah, I agree. And I thought some of it was... I think there are very memorable bits in it. Like, I think the section where she is at the house with Neil Patrick Harris, mm-hmm. I think is a really good, creepy, dangerous feeling segment that I found really memorable. And I think Ben Affleck, who obviously we all hate right now.
And always will
yeah. hate. I think being cast as, like, some dude was actually, like, a good idea. Like, he's mm-hmm. a really, like, average, unmemorable dude. And Rosamund Pike is, like, this kind of spiky, mean, weird little babe in the film.
And she's so brilliant.
She's so well cast.
The flashbacks, you just believe her.
Yeah.
She is just charming and beautiful and... When she has to switch, she can switch.
Yeah.
She can do it.
Yep. I really like this adaptation.
The other thing as well, I think, is that the beef that I had with Gone Girl, which is a book that I loved, you know, I read it when everyone was reading it. It's a really good time if you like thrillers and you haven't read it. Like, what the fuck are you doing? The thing is with it is that it should have... It goes on a little bit too long. It should have ended a few twists earlier. And the nature of cinema is that they kind of had to cut it down a little bit. So you lose the one twist, which I thought was just so stupid, or plot point. The vomit, do you remember that?
Nah.
Okay. Just, there's a whole thing with vomit, and it's just fucking stupid. And I'm glad they...
Axed it.
Yeah, axed that. That ended up on the cutting room floor. Whereas Dark Places is a book that I did enjoy when I read it. So I read her books like in reverse order. That's her second book. I read it second. And I really enjoyed it. It's about this child who survives a massacre. Her entire family are killed. I forget who. Is it her brother is arrested for the murder?
Yes.
That's it. And basically she's kind of in her 30s now. She was a baby when it all happened. She's run out of money. She was kind of... There was a big trust fund thing for her at the time of the incident. She's now run out of money, so she decides to try and sell some family stuff, like letters and things.
To, like, weird true crime people, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Which, first of all, loved that world.
Yeah.
Absolutely wild. All these, like, mostly dudes buying this random crap in a basement in some bar in, I presume, California. I can't remember where it was. Anyway, it was a good time. And then it kind of jumps back and forth between her present day, where there's like a true crime guy who wants to try and solve the case. And then obviously the time period of the build up to the murders. Book's great. Movie.
Was it Charlize Theron?
No idea. Honestly, I feel like I watched that whole film and it just... Yes, it was Charlize Theron. The whole film just evaporated from my head. It was so forgettable.
I'm very sad about it.
And you know what? It was so bland. I went to reread the book and I was like, I cannot be bothered because I feel like actually this is going to be quite boring.
Yeah. The film has disillusioned you to the book.
Yeah.
So I feel like this is a good point at which for us to talk about things we'd like to see get made, because I don't know about you,
mm-hmm.
I would love to see a film of Sharp Objects if it was done right.
Yes.
Which is Gillian Flynn's first novel that was released. Is that mm-hmm. right? Yeah. That was the first of hers I read. So I'd read that before Gone Girl came out. So when Gone Girl came out, I was super excited to read a new one.
Absolutely agreed. Sharp Objects is so dark. It's so weird.
It's her at so her well very plotted. Best, yeah. I think. Just in terms of, like, how dark you can go without real gore or, like, explicit, like... I think it's very psychological.
It's not gory, but there is
physical... There's a real physicality and...
There's a real image that will stay with me forever.
Yeah.
But, yeah, agreed.
It has one of the most memorable endings of any book I have read. So if you are listening to this podcast and you're like, I want to read a really good book, I would strongly recommend, and I think Alice would too, that you read Sharp Objects by Gillian Flynn.
Also, if you read The Roanoke Girls and were disappointed by it, Sharp Objects is basically a much better version of that book. It's like one of the shadiest things I've ever said.
So mean.
I know, can you believe it?
So what else would you like to see get made?
Right.
Or what are you surprised has not been filmed?
Well, I think the obvious one to discuss...
Is it the...
Secret History? But I actually feel like I'm at a point now where I just don't care. I don't care.
The world can live without it.
It's never going to happen.
Yeah.
Like, Gwyneth Paltrow apparently bought the rights to it.
Her brother bought the rights.
Her brother, okay. Yeah. With her in mind to play Camille.
Yeah.
Camilla.
Yeah.
And now she's too busy
And way too old.
She's too old. She's too busy with her, like, lifestyle bullshit. We're never going to see her in that movie, and that's fine. But I think it's got to the point, I'm not fussed anymore. For so long, I felt like, especially on LiveJournal, every so often people would be like, how would you cast it? Oh my God.
Yeah, because we want to bone all the characters.
Exactly.
So, like, it's fun to think about who we actually want to bone.
And now maybe it's because I feel like all the people that I wanted in that film because I wanted to bone them are too old to be in that film as well.
Or dead, because Philip Seymour Hoffman is, like, the top pick for Bunny. But he's fucking dead and would have been way too old.
And he's, like, way too old.
Yeah, but so is Gwyneth Paltrow. They're not that different in age.
Okay.
So I feel like it is the wrong time now for every reason.
Yeah, agreed. And I think now that it will be a cast of people that I've never heard of, which is still fine, but...
The cast of Riverdale can be in The Secret History.
It makes me less excited. Okay, but should I tell you about one that I am actually excited about? Something that I thought of on the way here. I would love to see a modern reboot of Rebecca.
Mm.
I'm thinking, like, directed by Andrea Arnold, who did, like, Red Road and Fish Tank and The Wuthering Heights.
Which was so... beautiful.
Amazing. Yeah. I just think she's amazing. So I imagine her doing Rebecca. It would be absolutely banging.
Who would you cast?
Oh my God, as Mrs. De Winter.
Yeah.
Oh, I don't know if this is too obvious. This is way too obvious. But what's the name of Therese in Carol?
Yeah, Rooney Mara.
Rooney Mara.
Hmm.
But I feel like that's too obvious.
Muy interesante. I don't know if this is just because I was thinking about other Daphne du Maurier adaptations, but I thought of Rachel Weisz. I don't know. But yeah, that's a good pick.
What have you got on your
What did
list?
I write on my little...
It's
my
got a little
wee
notebook over there.
My little nerdy notebook.
I have another one.
Oh, tell me.
And you still haven't read this book. The Pink Hotel.
Yeah, because you lent it to someone... And they didn't give
and
it back to you.
And she's still got it.
If you're listening,
oh, no, hang on. Have I got it back now? No, I think I've got it back.
Okay, cool. Hook me up.
I'll hook you up.
I only like paying for things that I couldn't get from someone else.
Yeah, exactly.
I don't want to buy it.
But this one now, it's really hard to get hold of anyway because they re-released it with a cover that doesn't really fit the book.
Oh, yeah.
And it's just dropped off everyone's radar.
So who is this book by?
Anna Stothard.
Okay, and sell it to me and tell me why it would make a good film.
Okay, so it is about an unnamed teenage narrator. It is, I always describe it as like a loose retelling of Rebecca, set in LA. It's got this kind of backdrop of Venice Beach. She goes to LA to attend her mother's funeral. Her mother's estranged, so she has grown up hearing about this woman, but she doesn't know her. She's never met her. So she goes to a funeral. At the funeral, in this massive, crumbling pink hotel on Venice Beach, she steals a suitcase of her mother's clothes and goes on the run. It is just so beautiful. It's so visual. It's really fucking dark. It's really well plotted. The ending of that book, I was just It grabbed me. It's
wild that this is not so a better known book.
It was shortlisted for what was the Orange Prize and now also formerly known as the Bailey's Prize.
Women's Prize.
Now the Women's Prize. In 2012, I think.
So it's that recent and yeah, I still haven't heard of it.
Because
I was an adult.
I think it's honestly because of bad marketing. It is in my top five books of all time.
I can't wait to read this.
Oh, God, you're
maybe
such
I will
a treat.
Pay money for it. Books on My Bags very kindly sent me a £10 World Book Depot.
Oh, hi.
So maybe I'll spend it on that. I don't
know. Treat yourself. So yeah, I would love to see that because, especially just because it's set in like the kind of seedy underbelly of LA. And I feel like that world usually belongs to men. It makes me think of like Bukowski.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And this is a 17-year-old at a time when she's able to like sneak into bars and kind of misbehave. I think it would be great. And I also want to see it directed by Andrew Arnold. I just want all adaptations to be done by Andrew Arnold.
Everything. So on the way here, I saw a poster for a film that I've recently seen that's coming out soon, which I knew was based on a book, but I don't feel like it's a book that a lot of people have read. It's Call Me By Your Name.
Oh, shit. I can tell you exactly why not a lot of people have read that book, because it went out of print and it's been really hard to get hold of for fucking ages. And finally, it has just come back into print.
With the film tie-in cover.
Yeah.
Which luckily has a very beautiful cover, which is, it's a very nice cover. It's not just a kind of generic, like, you know, what all film posters look like. The film is so wonderful. I loved it. And I believe that the book would also be great. So this is like a reverse one where I can advocate for the film, but I haven't read the book. But, you know. Most people haven't.
Ms. Claire Biddles on Twitter.
Yep.
It's one of her all-time favourite books.
Cool.
And we agreed to do a little swapperoo. So she read The Pink Hotel, and then I couldn't get hold of Call Me By Your Name. So that's why I picked it up immediately. But I trust her taste.
That's good. It's nice to know people like that. Unfortunately, I don't know any.
Nah.
So yeah, go see Call Me By Your Name when it comes out, because I think it's probably the opposite of The Snowman in that it is very good.
Can we talk about It?
Yeah, because last $3.99 Walthamstow Cinema Day, I went to see It. And I haven't read the book, because obviously, why would I read a 1,100-page book?
Me neither, because I don't have like 1,000 years to spend on a Stephen King novel.
I barely have that to spend. Like, even if Katsuo Shiguro released a 1,100-word novel, I would have to take some serious convincing to read it.
Never mind. I was going to ask you the most basic question. What's the longest book you've ever read?
The longest book I've ever read is probably a book that is going to get adapted sometime, which is A Little Life.
Oh, yeah, that's true. That's probably the same answer for me.
Yeah, that'll get turned into a film.
I would find that film really hard to watch, I don't think. But I think that's the problem. If that got adapted, so many people just would not be able to watch it.
Yeah, as soon as I said that will definitely get adapted, I was like, actually, I don't know if it would, because I think it would be too hard to either show or not show all of the things in the book.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know about that.
So it probably won't get adapted. But yeah, that's the longest book I've ever read, I think.
So back to It.
Tell me about It. The longest book that we will never read.
I went to see it with my mom. And
did you go to the Empire at Walthamstow?
We went to the Empire at Walthamstow. We did not go on $3.99 day. But so first of all, my mother, we're not quite sure what happened, but either she forgot that movies have a half hour of
ads,
credits, and ads and shit at the beginning, or when she saw the runtime, she took 100 minutes per hour rather than 60 minutes.
Yeah.
So either way, it was a lot longer than we're both expecting. And secondly, so neither of us really liked it, and I'll go into that in a second, but I think this is so funny. She said to me the other day, she's Brummy, so I'm going to do her accent. She's like, Alice, do you know what I think It? It, you know It.
I have met your mother many times and I can really see this conversation happening already.
She's like, you know, and I think it really lost its way. And I was like, when do you think it lost its way? She's like, when the kid got his arm bitten off.
So that was in the first scene.
Yeah, and I was like, but she was like, it was just too much. And I was like, but Mom, that happens in the book. It famously happens in the book. And she's like, yeah, I just don't think it was necessary. And I was like, I don't think in an adaptation of a Stephen King novel,
you should be surprised that happens.
But you can't like downplay the violence either. Like, if he wrote a 5-year-old having its arm bitten off by a clown in a sewer, you gotta have the amputation. That has to happen.
I just love that she thinks it lost its way within 5 minutes. That was when she was really on board, and then after 5 minutes she was like, I am out.
I know. And then we were there for like another 2.5 hours.
Yeah, it was fucking long.
It was really long. It was way too long. And you know, it's a shame, is I feel like it would have been a really satisfying, fun Netflix series.
Because it was basically like Stranger Things.
It was just Stranger Things. And it has this really strange thing about being 80s nostalgia, but it also felt like it was aimed at people who are not old enough to have nostalgia about the 80s. Like, yeah. I'm 30 and I don't have 80s nostalgia.
Yeah.
Because I was 5 in the 80s. So it kind of, I find that current trend sort of a strange combo. Anyway, I found the humor in it was just, I just felt too old for it. We were surrounded by teenagers. They were having a great time.
You were not.
No, I was not. I also found, I know that the whole kind of premise of the book is about the kind of cruelty of adults and the kind of, I don't know, like the kind of meanness of the world, and that childhood is this like frightening,
formative,
lonely thing.
Terrifying. Yeah.
But I felt like the film didn't take certain elements of that seriously enough.
Yeah.
Like the abuse that the female character, Beverly, suffers. It's very strange to me to have scenes like that, and then the next minute they're all kind of having a rock fight. And
yeah, yeah, it was weird. Like,
tonally, it just felt off to me.
It was like the opposite of Let the Right One In, where it's like all sadless, lonely, like sad, lonely. It's so weird and sad to be a kid and not really get the world, isolation. And it's not entertaining at all. Whereas it didn't really have that atmosphere when that is the point of it, in a way. I don't know.
Sorry, I kind of had to stifle a laugh there because you're like, and it is not entertaining at all. It's like one of your favorite movies, but obviously you're using that entertaining in a different way.
It's not like a kind, like there are no rock fights, I don't think, but there is someone having their limbs ripped off, so I guess it and Let the Right One In have that in common. What would have to be in the sewer for you to go into the sewer?
Vine.
Oh my god, you'd follow it into the sewer if you could get Vine back. Oh my god, I love it.
Because I'm so thirsty for fame.
Oh, I was talking only last night to my friend Alex about how good you were at Vine.
Oh, I miss it so much. Yeah. Every day. What would have to be in the sewer for you to follow it down there?
Armie Hammer, star of Call Me By Your Name. He's literally so fit, it makes me vomit. I love him so much. And he just seems like a cool dude that just wants to bang all the time.
What adaptations are you excited about that are coming out soon or currently being made? Because I have two on my list.
Tell me about yours, because I don't... Oh, I do have one.
Oh, she's got one.
We're going to talk about this book in the next episode.
Oh, okay.
But the film I'm looking forward to is The Little Stranger.
Oh, yeah.
Sarah Waters, Lady of the Good Books.
When is the adaptation coming out?
I don't know, but it's being made or has been made already. So it should not be too far off. I'm looking forward to that. Tell me about yours.
Well, I'm looking forward to one that I'm sure you're looking forward to as well. Dumplin.
Oh my God, yes. And we both follow Julie Murphy on Instagram.
And Dolly Parton has written some original music for the adaptation.
This is so good. Isn't it so nice? Because we both follow Julie Murphy, who wrote Dumplin, on Instagram. And she's like posting pictures from the set. And it's just like, it's really happening.
It's like the most joyful thing.
And the lead actress in Dumplin, who plays the titular character, is called Danielle McDonald. And she was in a not great film called Patty Cakes.
Oh.
But while I was watching Patty Cakes, I thought, this is kind of like Dumplin. And she could play Dumplin. And then they cast her as Dumplin.
That's so wild, because I didn't know that's who that was.
Yeah.
And as soon as we were talking about Dumplin, I was like, I wonder if that chick from Patty Cakes is going to be in it.
Yeah.
She looked really great from the trailer.
Yeah.
I fully believe it's going to be great. I think it's going to be a really good time. I need to know which drag queens they have cast in it.
That information is going to be online.
Yeah. But.
Oh, yeah. Speaking of like cool upcoming YA adaptations, are you also going to talk about The Hate U Give?
Yes.
That looks so good.
Yeah, dude.
I'm really looking forward to that. The Hate U Give by Angie Thomas. If you haven't read it, you are seriously wasting your life. It is an amazing book. She writes so well. It is so hashtag powerful and hashtag timely. And it's going to be a great film.
Yeah, again, I've seen photos from the set. And like the lead who plays...
Amanda Stenberg.
Yeah, she has a copy of the book that's full of notes. And today, Angie Thomas tweeted a picture of her like making notes in her book. And, oh, yes. It's going to be so
good. It's going to be so great. So basically, YA, as ever, is the future.
And in fact, you know, that's it for my list of adaptations I'm excited about.
Yeah.
Two YA.
Yeah, and me, one sad little ghost story. Before we check out, I just want to know, Alice, what are you reading at the moment?
Well, Bethany, I'm currently reading Eight Ghosts, which is a collection of new ghost stories from...
Of course you are. Of course that's what you're
reading. What else? So each author was sent to English Heritage site and wrote a story inspired by that site. And it features Mark Haddon, Jeanette Winterson, Sarah Perry, Andrew Michael Hurley, Stuart Evers, Camilla Shamsie, Kate Clancy, and Max Porter.
Cool.
So it's like an amazing list of people.
That is actually amazing.
I've read three of the stories so far and they are banging. So I really recommend it.
Cool. I didn't know this existed and I'm sad about it. So
I know. Well, because it would have been perfect for the Halloween episode, but I only just picked it up. So
damn. The Halloween episode, which is the next episode,
mm-hmm.
and is banging. So, you know.
What are you reading right now, Bethany?
So I was so happy to get up to date with all of my reading for this very podcast because it meant that I could then read a book that our good friend, Jenny Tighe, the love of our lives.
Oh my God, I know what book you're reading.
Yes, that you, I know you have
yes,
also
I read.
It. Jenny passed it on to me after being lent it by a friend. It is a proof of a book that I think comes out next
January.
Year in January. It's called Lullaby by Leila Slimani.
God, it's so good.
And it recently won the Prix Goncourt in France. So it ain't shit. And it is about and you know this from the very first page, about a nanny who murders the children that she looks after. That's what I'm reading.
Oh, what a gem.
Yeah.
I'm happy for you.
It's real good, all you know.
What page are you on?
Page 40.
Whee! That's the name of the show.
I think we've had a good... We've really covered a lot in this episode.
Mm-hmm.
So well
and
done.
And there's still more. I can still think of more that I intended to talk about. We ran out of time.
I'm very sorry
about
it. Maybe
we'll do a part two.
But thank you so much for joining us again. Before we go, we just wanted to ask you a little favour. If your podcast app has a rate and or review function, especially if you use the Apple Podcast app, we would super appreciate it if you could leave us a good review or even just give us a star rating. This helps us because it makes us look good and it helps people like you who want to listen to two babes talk about books. Alice and I can be found on Twitter at whatpagepod. Alice is...
At Smokin' Tofu, no G.
Smokin' Tofu. And I am Bethany Rutter. If you need more than 140 or 280 characters, if you're one of the chosen ones, you can email us at whatpagepod@gmail.com. We will see you in a couple of weeks. Bye.
Bye.